Godzilla is now in New York City.
Monster 01 and 02, commence the attack.
Fun this week?
I did. It was a little bit better.
Alright, well that's the important thing. Important thing is that you not be miserable every week. Just some weeks.
Most I was pretty weeks. Miserable last week.
Yeah, I saw you were pretty miserable last week.
Yeah.
But what movie did you have fun watching this week?
This week we watched Godzilla versus
No.
This is King Kong versus Godzilla. My apologies.
There we go.
1962.
Yeah. That is the subject of this week's episode of Stomp This Way. I'm Aaron, and joining me today are...
Angie.
And I'm Dylan.
And yeah, so this is the third film in the Godzilla franchise. The first in color.
The first in color.
Yeah, so...
No more black and white.
No more black
and white. For a
while. For a while. We'll get back around to it in a little while. But as usual, we're going to kind of talk a little bit about how this movie was made. And there's a really interesting story behind this one. I kind of whipped it up on the fly, so I may not have got all the details, but it'll be all right. And then we will play a trailer, and then we will talk about our thoughts on King Kong Tai Godzilla. Kingu Kongu Tai Godzilla.
Sorry if Aaron sounds a little odd. He's a little under the weather right now.
A little under the weather. We will power through this, and I will share my germs with everyone. All right. So, quickly, we'll start with alternate titles. Really, this movie was known pretty much all across the world as King Kong versus Godzilla, but there were a couple of notable alternate titles. One from Germany, The Return of King Kong, and one from Italy, The Triumph of King Kong. Because at this point, Godzilla was not nearly as marketable worldwide as King Kong was, so, you know, drop Godzilla out of
whatever.
But before we get started, you know, so last we left Godzilla, it was 7 years ago, Godzilla Raised Again had come out. The movie was a financial success, but critically it was a failure, and I think that Toho knew that if they just started pumping out a bunch of sequels, that people would probably not go see them because Godzilla Raised Again did not have good word of mouth. So they put the series to bed without any really solid plans of bringing it back. They were just, you know, okay, well, he had his day, he's done. And so really, we should be grateful to King Kong because he resurrected Godzilla So around 1960, Willis O'Brien, who is the creator of he was the special effects wizard on the original King Kong, really the creator of the character of King Kong. He wrote a treatment for a story called King Kong vs. Frankenstein. He wanted it to be made into a movie, obviously, so he gave it to producer John Beck, who was a Hollywood producer at the time, and John Beck had someone, like, turn it into a full-fledged script, and he started shopping it around in the U.S., but because of the high cost of stop motion, no U.S. studio really wanted to take it on, so he started shopping it around overseas. And Toho, at this time, they were interested in making a King Kong movie, so they heard of this script, and they got in contact with John Beck and were like, hey, we're interested in buying the rights to this character off of you. And he was like, okay. So he sold them this script. This is all behind Willis O'Brien's back. Willis O'Brien really got screwed over on this deal. And whenever we get to the original King Kong, we'll talk about how sucky Willis O'Brien's life was. He had a terrible go at it. And this was like the least of his problems. But anyway, so Toho gets this. They didn't have the rights to Frankenstein at this time, so they're like, well, obviously, we can't actually film this script because we don't have the rights to Frankenstein. So they had Shinichi Sekizawa come in and rewrite the script, and they were like, okay, well, can't use Frankenstein. Who do we have in our back lot that can go up against Godzilla? I mean, go up against King Kong. And someone was like, we got that Godzilla thing laying around. We can bring him back. And they were like, okay.
I guess.
So Godzilla, thanks to Kong, got his second crack, well, third crack at the big screen. Tsuburaya at the time, he was working on a fairy tale film called Princess Kaguya, I guess. I've never actually watched the movie, but he was a little skeptical about returning, but he's a huge Kong fan, so that helped them convince him. And he liked the script that they presented him with, so he's like, okay, I'll come back and do the effects. Saying Tsuburaya also, so, you know, the first two Godzilla movies were really dark and somber movies. He wanted them to be more kid-friendly, so he's the one that really pushed for this kind of lighthearted tone that we kind of got with the monster action and stuff. Toho paid RKO, who is the company that put out the original King Kong movie, $220,000 for the rights to the King Kong name and character. Also, little interesting tidbits. I think his name is Hirose? And Nakajima, Hirose played King Kong, and Nakajima obviously played Godzilla. They were given pretty much free reign to do whatever choreography they wanted during the monster fights. And also some fun facts about the octopus scene. They used four live octopuses sounds kind of nasty, but for the fight scene between Kong and the octopus. This was obviously not PETA approved, because they forced these octopuses to move across these little miniature sets, which could not have felt good, and they were blowing hot air on them to make them move. And three of them they did re-release into the wild. One of them was chopped up and made into Tsuburaya's dinner one night. But no animals were harmed. Actually, at least a few animals were harmed in the making of this movie. So, you know, oops. And then we'll get to the American version. We did not watch the American version, but I have seen it many, many times. John Beck was given exclusive rights to produce the American cut. Scenes were filmed with a UN reporter. I don't think the UN actually has reporters, but we'll skip over that. And it, like, a lot of it is him talking to this like ape primate expert or something, and they're just like kind of filling in the gaps. They're giving, you know, just American actors in there to make it feel kind of like an American movie, so American people go watch it. Fukube's score was replaced totally with stock music. Actually, if you... Wrong. I like Fukube's score better, because I just love Fukube, but the score in the American version, even though it's all stock music, it sounds really natural to the movie, and it's actually pretty good, not gonna lie. The budget, they spent $15,500 to reshoot those, or to shoot those new scenes and re-edit the movie together, and then they sold it to Universal for $200,000 for Universal to distribute it. And so, box office. So this movie was released in Japan on August 11th of 1962. A long time ago. And the budget was 150 million yen, so that would translate roughly to
1.3 million, I guess.
1.5 million, or so. Somewhere around there. Total attendance, the number of tickets sold was 12. They did, I think, the initial release and then like two re-releases pretty close together. And all in all, it had sold 12,550,000 tickets. It is the most attended Japanese Godzilla film and the 13th most successful film in the Japanese box office in terms of number of tickets sold of all time. So a big hit in terms of money at 430 million yen. So
about 3.9 million USD.
So yeah, around $4 million in today's dollars. So released in the US on June 26th of the following year, 1963, made $2.7 million. So a decent hit over here in the States as well. So yeah,
made their money back.
It was a big hit back in the day, back in the 60s. So
I mean, almost $7 million on a $1.5 million, or on a $1.5 million movie.
Yeah, so
not bad.
They made their money.
So that's really all I had for the making of this movie. I guess we're going to go to the trailer. When we come back, I will read off the cast and crew, and Dylan will read off my nice prepared plot synopsis, and we will get into our discussion. See you in a minute.
Sacrifice to his brute embrace.
Godzilla has a brain,
about this size. He is sheer brute force. While Kong is a thinking animal. His brain is considerably larger. About 10 times the size of this gorilla's skull. Being instinctive rivals, there is no doubt that they will attempt to destroy one another.
King Kong versus Godzilla, heading for their colossal collision. Shattering every obstacle that stands between them in the most fantastic rampage of annihilation ever recorded on film. See King Kong stamp Tokyo into the ground, holding a beautiful girl in his grasp. See Godzilla destroy an entire army. See King Kong trapped by the blazing barrier of a billion volts. But nothing, nobody can stop the great showdown when King Kong and Godzilla meet to fight for survival of the fittest.
All right, we're back. So this movie was obviously directed by Ishiro Honda.
What do you mean, obviously?
Obviously. Written by Shinichi Sekizawa, who has written, I think, the other two Godzilla movies as well by this point. And then starring Tadeo Takashima, who we talked about passed away last week. Then Kenji Sahara, Yu Fujiki, Ichiro Arashima, and Mi Hama. And then Haruo Nakajima as Godzilla. And I didn't write his name down. Oops. Hirose, I don't know what his first name is, as King Kong. So why don't you read off the plot summary?
All right, here we go, guys. When a pharmaceutical company's TV subsidiary becomes desperate for ratings, head of the company, Mr. Taco, sends explorers Sakurai and Kinsaburo to Faroe Island in search of a giant monster to feature on its program. A wrench is thrown into things, however, when Godzilla arises from his icy tomb and begins wreaking havoc across Japan. Back on the island, the explorers discover Kong, a giant ape worshipped as a god by the natives, and successfully drug him and drag him to Japan on a raft. Because of Godzilla, the Japanese government is very skeptical of allowing a giant monster onto mainland Japan, and the maritime authorities deny Mr. Taco the right to bring Kong into port. But it's too late as Kong awakes from his slumber and also begins marching his way across Japan. In their first encounter, Kong is quickly scared off by Godzilla's atomic ray and the monsters go their separate ways, continuing to destroy everything in their path. The JSDF is successful in luring Godzilla away from Tokyo, but Kong breaks through the defenses. The JSDF is successful in drugging Kong at the suggestion of Sakurai and then fly him to Godzilla, hoping that the two monsters will kill each other in battle. After a rumble for the ages, both Kong and Godzilla fall into the sea, but only Kong resurfaces.
Alright, so this movie starts off with... Well, first of all, so this movie, obviously from the beginning, is taking a much different approach to this to the Godzilla movies. They are much lighter, much more lighthearted affair than the previous two Godzilla movies. This is pretty much a straight-up comedy from the beginning.
What do you mean, pretty much it is?
It is a straight-up comedy.
It's a straight-up comedy.
Which is, I like it because, you know, especially like in terms of our podcast, we've been watching, you know, these really serious monster movies that have taken themselves really serious. Or movies that
are trying to take themselves too serious.
The only one that I think pulled it off was the original Godzilla movie. The rest of them took themselves far too serious.
As far as these Japanese films I think we're talking about, I mean,
yeah.
Beast from 20,000 Fathoms I thought was pretty
good.
It was a decent movie.
Okay.
But yeah, but I like that they're taking this like comedic approach. I really like. I think Mr. Taco is
My question is, why do they call him Taco? Like
Taco.
If he's from Japan, if like T A K O should be like Taco. I feel like. I'm just saying.
I don't know. Whatever. I've always heard it. So Taco. But I think he is genuinely funny a character. Yeah. I mean, he's just like a slapstick character, but he has some genuinely funny bits in this. There are some genuinely funny bits for all the characters, I think, in this movie. I'll give this movie credit. There are actual characters in this movie.
There are.
I think pretty much all the main characters, they are, throughout the movie, they actually all have motivations. Like, we have this weird kind of, I guess I'll call it a love triangle, where,
Fumiko!
Sakurai and his sister Fumiko.
Fumiko!
And then Kenji Sahara's character, Katsuo Fujita. Katsuo is Fumiko's boyfriend, and Sakurai is her brother.
But they seem really close.
But they're, like, really close. Like, there's this really awkward line in the beginning where he's like, I see you two were busy before y'all started cooking dinner. And he, like, grabs a napkin and wipes the lipstick off her boyfriend's face. I know my sister's lipstick. And I'm like, how do you know your sister's lipstick? But they, obviously, I think him and his sister live together, and they live in this apartment next to Katsuo, and like just a couple of apartments down. But
Fumiko,
they're obviously really close, and he really doesn't like her boyfriend. But her boyfriend, like in the scene that we have in their apartment, like the important thing for the plot that they introduce here is that
this like weird string,
this wire that he's invented, and it's like super strong and unbreakable. And he goes out and swings on the balcony like Tarzan. It's kind of funny, but I like these characters. I think they're entertaining.
They shot Fumiko a lot in this, or Fumi.
I like these characters in this movie. I think they're entertaining, Mr. Taka. And then obviously we have the Sakurai is sent to Faroe Island with his partner. What's his name? Kintsaburo or whatever. Mm-hmm. He's kind of funny too. He's like a really slapstick character. And this island scene is a little racist.
It's bad, y'all. Yeah. They have a bunch of Japanese people
in blackface.
They've not only blackfaced them, guys.
They've
painted their entire bodies black.
And it's bad no matter how you... I mean, it's 1960s Japan, you know, and they don't... I don't feel like they have, you know, like, they don't have, like, the racial awareness that we have here in the U.S. because I think literally 99% of the Japanese population is native Japanese. So, you know, not really.
A couple whiteys thrown in there.
A few white immigrants, but... What makes it so bad is that it's not even, like, good body paint, because, like, it's kind of, like,
listen, I'm patchy. Telling you exactly what it is. It's not body paint. They burned a bunch of stuff and rubbed them all in charcoal. That's exactly what it looks like.
Probably.
But, like, hey, guys.
And it's patchy, like, because, like, there's, like, spots of light. Like, their skin is not, like, a consistent color. Like, it's lighter and darker and, like, patches. And I feel like if they started sweating and stuff, like, it started to, like, come off. It's like, oops. Anyway, we have this island scene. And meanwhile, there's a submarine out in this field of icebergs.
Submarine, shall we add, where they speak English.
Yeah, where they speak English, yeah. In the American version, they actually re-dubbed over the American people, so they didn't sound different so American dopey. But,
They're like, the actual American actors in this movie, that's a no. We gotta get different American actors to re-dub.
But we have
this.
A little bit of continuity here, and that's something that's kind of rare, honestly, guys, in the Godzilla franchise.
They wake up Godzilla from an iceberg.
Yes, because he goes frozen in ice.
Because he was frozen in ice, and Godzilla raids again.
Now, does it really make sense that island, like...
floated
broke apart into iceberg? No, but we'll get over it. But, like... and also, like, the submarine, they couldn't see that they were gonna run into this iceberg.
Or, like, pick that up on, like, the radar? Something.
On their sonar or something, like, but whatever. It makes for an interesting
there's
scene.
There's a thing there, but I'm not quite sure.
It makes for an interesting scene. They run into this iceberg, and then Godzilla, like, burns up their sub. And then the helicopter flies over. Godzilla appears at 26 minutes, the 26 minute mark. He's the first monster to show up, and he bursts out of the ice, and he's like, oh, Gojira! And Godzilla.
From a white man, yeah, saying, oh, Gojira.
And Godzilla's theme is back and immediately goes into boom, 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 boom. And he goes and attacks this
literally every time he appears on screen.
I think it's a Soviet base in the Arctic that he attacks.
Goodness.
But I'm not really sure. I think there's a couple of tanks that have like Soviet symbols on them, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. But anyway, he destroys it. Pretty neat little... I think it's a neat little like model set that he goes in there and he destroys
it. It's actually one of the better military models I've seen in one of these movies so far. Yeah. Especially as far as like the military vehicles go.
Yeah.
But we'll talk about effects later.
I knew you were going to say it. But anyway, so then
getting back to the island, I would say we'll definitely talk about effects later.
So then it's only about 8 minutes later, the octopus shows up. And he starts, you know, wreaking havoc on this island. And then King Kong shows up at the 37 minute mark. So he shows up 11 minutes after Godzilla. I was going to ask you, because I think it's an interesting question. You know, when we were watching here a while back, not for this podcast, obviously, but we were watching the Freddy vs. Jason. And I was like, that's obviously a Nightmare on Elm Street movie with Jason in it.
Yeah.
In this case, would you say this is a Kong movie with Godzilla or a Godzilla movie with Kong?
That's a good question. I would say it's a King Kong movie with Godzilla.
Really? You know, watching it this time, I think they do a really good job of balancing the two characters, because I don't think it's, like, super obvious. But watching it this time, I got the feeling that it was, if you had to make me pick, I would say it's a Godzilla movie with Kong in it, even though Kong is top billed. Because, I mean, for one thing, Godzilla has more screen time in this movie than he does in a lot of movies where he's top billed, being honest. And, I don't know, Godzilla, he shows up first. I feel like a lot of the scenes with the military are concerned around Godzilla, while a lot of Kong scenes are kind of like this side story with them on the island. But I think they do a really... It's hard to pick, because I think they do a really good job of balancing the two characters.
I don't know, maybe if I watch it again someday, I'll decide different, but...
You think Kong? Because Kong, I mean, Kong does win at the end, kind of, but...
And he's the last person that you see.
Monster that you hear, and he's got the last... And like I said, he is the top build monster, but I don't know, I just feel like watching this movie, a lot of the concerns are centered around... But, like I said, they do a really good job of balancing the characters, so it's not really... Yeah. You can't really clearly, I think, draw a line and say, you know, it's this person's movie with the other guy in it. But, anyway, so Kong fights this octopus, beats it,
and they... Gotta talk about Kong, that octopus.
We'll talk about effects a little bit later, but... But PETA, oh my god, if they'd been around,
have a field day.
They would have had a stroke. Some poor PETA animal rights activist was on this set, and he'd have had a stroke. He'd die right there. Especially when Super Eye is like, well,
I want that one for dinner.
He's like,
PETA goes like,
But, nah, so they put Kong to sleep with these red berries and...
Red berries?
Yeah. And Kong, like, literally...
Might we add the natives have been slave working away on? That doesn't seem very right.
He literally gets drunk on these berries. Like, he gets these little vases that they... Like, huge, like, man-sized vases they put him in, and he, like, downs them, like, shots. And then...
He drugged this poor guy.
Just goes to sleep and they start chanting.
Not only once, but twice.
Twice. And then, anyway, they ship Kong off to Japan. Yeah, blah, blah, blah.
Where is this island supposed to be?
Southeast Asia?
Solomon Island, something like that. Is that a real place?
I don't know. I think it's in Southeast Asia somewhere. It's not a real island, but.
No.
Why didn't they? I guess they didn't have the rights to Skull Island, so. Or they just didn't want to use Skull Island. I don't know.
The Solomon Islands are. Off the coast of Australia.
Oh.
They are near Papua New Guinea.
They're down under.
They're like directly due west or due east of Papua New Guinea.
Well, anyway, Kong gets loose. I love the scene where Kong gets loose where, like, it's actually pretty funny where they have the little dynamite detonator there and Mr. Taco, like, puts his hands on it and they're like, no, no, no. And then he puts his hands on it again, like, no, no, no. And then during the whole, well, I guess he accidentally falls on it. But it doesn't detonate, so they have to shoot the dynamite. But anyway, so King Kong and Godzilla's first fight. I love the fact that Godzilla just, like, totally dominates. Like, Kong throws a rock at him, and then Godzilla just uses his heat ray, and Kong's like, no, we're not doing this. And he runs away.
He's like, I'm out, boys.
I'm out. So, you know, I talked about how this originally, like, the original story idea for this was King Kong versus Frankenstein. I think you can see a lot of that, the elements of that story still here, because King Kong is basically giant Frankenstein, because he really, in the way that he absorbs electricity and gains strength from electricity, that's obviously something they took from that original treatment for King Kong versus Frankenstein from the Frankenstein character, because Godzilla in this movie is afraid of electricity, even though, like, in the first movie, he breasted through the power lines no problem. I thought it was interesting. Interesting little detail, if you watch the train attack scene with Godzilla, which I think is a pretty well-done scene, he never actually crosses the power lines that are in that scene. He walks along beside him. Although I had to say that Fumiko in that movie, like, she is such a classic damsel in distress. Like, she can't even run. Like, she's falling down in the water.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Like, when she's, like, trying to, like, run away, I'm like...
And Katsuo has to come and save her.
Why are you running through the water?
Well, she's, like, trying to cross the stream, but, like, why is she falling down so much? And I think she's got high heels on. I'm like, take your shoes off, girlfriend. Like,
why didn't he follow everybody else?
But, you know, whatever. And then,
It's not my problem.
She tried to get on that truck, but they drove away without her.
She could have followed everybody else.
Whatever. Anyway. But anyway, so then we get to King Kong. He breaks through the power lines and the defenses and everything. He gets to Tokyo. Okay, scale is way off. So, you know, in the original, you know, Godzilla's 50 meters tall, King Kong's 45 meters tall or whatever. You know, in the original Godzilla movie, when Godzilla came up to the Capitol building, he like towered over the Capitol building. In this movie, King Kong is about the same size as the Capitol building. So, yeah, the scale's a little iffy. But Sakurai gets the idea that to put the berry juice in the rocket heads.
And they'll explode and
drug Kong again. And then they carry him off. They have
the native people, somehow they recorded
the native people singing. For some, like, somewhere along the way. But, you know, kind of whatever.
Whatever.
And then that wire, that super strong wire that Katsuo had at the beginning, they use it to tie King Kong to these hot air balloons and carry him off to fight Godzilla. And then we have one of the greatest rubber-suited monster matches ever seen at the end of it. You know, Godzilla at first kicks King Kong's butt, and then King Kong gets struck by lightning.
And he drop kicks this boy.
he drop kicks
this boy down a hill.
And then, but then King Kong gets struck by lightning and kind of turns into like Emperor Palpatine with like lightning coming out of his fingers. And then the fight gets a little more even. Kong starts kind of getting an advantage. Destroy the castle like necessary, obviously.
I mean, clearly.
Yeah. And then they fall into the water at the same time. And then Kong resurfaces. Toho has said this is a Kong win, and it is, because at the time, King Kong was the bigger character, more popular character. But I think you could construe it as a tie, really, because Godzilla can swim underwater, so why does he need to resurface, you know, but whatever. Got and then you hear them both roar at the end, and it's over. You know, there was a rumor for a long time that somehow got started that the Japanese ending had Godzilla winning, and the American ending was the one where King Kong won, but that's false. King Kong wins in both versions.
Wrong.
But... Anything else y'all want to add to the story? I pretty much summarized the whole movie.
No, it's an entertaining story. It's definitely much more lighthearted premises.
I think the characters are made better.
They're much better written. Yeah. They're more likable. You actually kind of care about them, and you enjoy watching them on screen.
I think everybody gives a good performance too. I think Tadao Takashima, he's really good as the lead role here, and Kenji Zahara, who we'll talk about many more times on this podcast, he's a great actor. I really like him as the boyfriend here. That scene where he's like out there when Kong picks up Fumiko and has her in his hand after, you know, he grabs
Fumiko!
Fumiko! Fumiko! It's funny. And then the guy playing Mr. Taka, what was his name? Ichiro Arishima or whatever. He's really funny in this movie.
That they went for a more lighthearted tone. Yeah. It's such a goofy movie that it's hard to not be entertained.
Yeah. You cannot not like it.
Well, you can. And I'm sure there are people out there that are like, ew, this is disgusting.
The two lead women in it are pretty, too.
What are you trying to say? Does that mean they have value, Aaron?
Have value?
Since I'm pretty, I have that. Whatever Zendaya says in Spider-Man.
Since I'm pretty.
Not what I meant. But
I was just joking with you.
But it's not about Spider-Man.
I'm pretty sure that the girl that plays Fumiko or whatever, she was like a model or something.
Yeah, like her her profile, like the picture on her profile for IMDb is like her like in modeling lingerie.
Lingerie or something.
I'm like, all right.
Well, it's kind of risque for 60s Japan.
I'm like, okay.
And I'm pretty sure Mr. Taka was the guy that played Ichiro Arishima. I think he was, I may be lying out my teeth, but I think he was some kind of like comedian, like stand-up comedian or something in Japan.
Maybe.
But maybe. I don't know. I think it's a fun ride.
I don't know. It's entertaining. That's definitely.
It's got questionable moments. Obviously, why is Godzilla suddenly afraid of electricity?
Yeah, but I mean, it's 1962. I mean, I'm not gonna fault it for its story.
Yeah.
The biggest thing that I'm gonna fault it on is something we'll talk about later.
Something we'll talk about in a minute.
But yeah, anyway, I guess the next thing we're gonna talk about is the
creature design. We always start with Godzilla.
Godzilla.
So
he's a little bit chunkier than his last appearance.
A little more filled out. My basic thought on the suit.
He's got thick thighs, y'all.
I really like this suit. All the way up until you get to the head.
His head's like really narrow.
The head looks better than it did in Raids Again. Way better.
They took the very top of his head and like crushed it in on both sides.
Well, it's still a little flat on top. And like the mouth, like it doesn't always close all the way, so it just kind of hangs open sometimes. And he kind of still looks a little dopey.
Yeah, but he's like all squished in on the top.
It is a little weird shape, but it's not as bad as.
And then he's got thick thighs. He got thunder thighs.
And his eyes are back to being on the side of his head, like a reptile, you know. So that's good. And he does have thick thighs, because he always has thick thighs.
Boy, you got thick boys.
He never really gets rid of those thick thighs. So, But I like, especially from the side and the dorsal plates in the suit look really good. You know, the one prominent row and then the two really smaller rows on each side. I think from the side view, the suit actually looks really good. I really like it.
Yeah, I think Godzilla looks good in this movie. Besides, like you said, his head's a little odd.
His head is a little odd.
Head's a little weird.
We'll talk about the octopus real quick.
It's a real octopus.
It's a real octopus. The scenes with the real octopus look really good.
Never mind.
There is a rubber octopus that they use that doesn't look so good.
No.
And then there's, some tentacle action that doesn't look too great.
We'll talk about the effects later.
But, and then, of course, Kong looks like a freaking
big oaf.
He does not look good. And the suit, the puppet looks really dopey. Like, he looks really stupid.
His arms don't move.
The suit, sometimes they have arm extensions in, and it actually looks, because, apes are supposed to have longer arms or whatever, but it actually makes the suit look really awkward and worse. When they don't have the arm extensions in, it moves more naturally, and it looks better.
Yeah, when those arm extensions in, they kind of just, drag with
them. They flop at the side.
I'm like, what's happening?
but Kong does look, but he kind of looks like, it's kind of, lovably bad, I have to say. I don't know, I like Kong. I mean, I've grown fond of Kong's look in this movie, even though it's bad.
He looks stupid, but
Just wait till we get to King Kong Escapes. Good. Oh my god, he looks so
That's terrible. A long time from now.
That's man. A long time from now, but yeah, he looks so terrible.
It's like
2 years
from now.
This is probably the second worst that Kong has ever looked, so I mean, it's a little rough. Yeah, when he's running sometimes, and he's just kind of flopping his arms on the side. It is kind of funny, but...
Oh my gosh, speaking of something, I don't know, it just reminded me of... I saw the extra footage on Endgame the other day.
Oh, God.
So the Stanley tribute is actually pretty cool.
Yeah.
The extra scene that they did is the worst rendered CGI Hulk. It's not finished. Yeah. If the scene's not finished, his mouth doesn't even move when he talks. And he's, really thin and awkward looking. And when he walks, he's like... And his arm move like that. And I'm like, what?
Anyway. So let's talk about effects.
Ooh.
The effects are hit and miss. There are some really neat effects. I think that Godzilla's blue heat ray, the first time his heat ray
was
blue.
Let's just say, okay, let's go ahead and start out. Anything that is matted in this movie pretty much looks like garbage.
It looks really bad. They look like little blue men in front of this camera.
Anytime the octopus is interacting with people, looks like garbage.
Looks terrible. Godzilla's claymation stop motion drop kick.
A little rough.
When looks
the
a little rough.
Octopus grabbed that person.
It starts flinging around. Oh my gosh.
It
looks so
terrible. Horrible.
It looks bad.
But I do say Godzilla's atomic breath looks pretty sick.
It looks
and
pretty cool.
In color this time.
And
it's blue.
When his spine's glow blue, that's pretty decent animation. They did a good job of keeping the blue just on the white part of his dorsal fins. And I think that looks pretty good.
I like it, actually.
All the explosions and stuff look really good. I think
the models look great in this.
All the models look really good.
And I think that they did a really good job with the vehicles in this movie as opposed to some other past films. One of my flaws of Godzilla Rays Again, for as far as the models go, was the tanks. They look like toys. And clearly they're toys in this movie.
They did
a better job of making it look more natural.
When they're not moving,
I think they look really good.
Yeah.
And the models, like I said, the models look good. Especially the castle, which is man size.
It's a 6 foot tall, five foot, six foot tall
that's a
castle model. Castle.
And the Capitol building, which is also the King Kong suit actor has to get on his top of and stand on, also is really good. So, good work there, guys. Really good job.
But the matting is garbage.
Yes.
And then the actual fight itself, I think, they said they got to do their own choreography. I think it's an entertaining fight. They do some really fun stuff.
The lightning is kind of rough.
Yeah, they're throwing rocks at each other is fun.
Some of the paintings look
kind of rough.
Kind of rough.
But Godzilla using his tail is fun. Godzilla burning Kong is always fun.
Every time he burns him, the guy in the suit's like...
Yeah, patting himself. And then them rolling around on the ground, hitting each other. It's a lot of fun. I really like that last fight.
I don't know. It's pretty entertaining.
It's entertaining. It's entertaining. Finally, we talk about the score. Ifukube
Akira
is back.
Fukube.
I like his score a lot for this movie. Godzilla's theme is used.
He's very repetitive. It's literally half the score is bum, 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 bum.
So, they don't actually... This movie, they... So, you know, in the original movie, they had the march, the bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum-bum- introduce the intro, but they don't connect it to the march yet. That's later when the, you know, that intro and the march are actually connected, which is what is now considered, you know, like the classic Godzilla theme. But even like what follows the intro, the bum 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 bum, that's really good. I think the military march is really good in this movie.
It's classic military.
I love the I really like the King Kong chant that the natives do. Yeah. I think it's kind of a dig.
No, the score for this is actually pretty dang good.
Yeah, I like it a lot. Anytime Fukube scores a movie, you know it's going to be pretty good. You know what you're getting. You know it's going to be good. I like it a lot.
It's fun. It's loud.
It has themes. What I love about old movies is that you have character themes, you know, like Godzilla's theme, Vader's theme, all that. Movies nowadays don't really do...
They just do a score, I guess.
They just do scores. So, you know, I always love a good character theme. But anyway.
Let's get into some final thoughts over there. Let's start with Andrew.
Andrew, you always get to go
Tell
first.
Me what you think.
I think so far this is the best made Godzilla movie we've watched so far.
No.
Well.
Most entertaining?
Most fun? Most entertaining one.
Mm-hmm.
Way better than Raised Again. And I think I'm going to give this movie a B.
A B. All right.
All right.
All right. Obviously, I really love this movie. I think it's a lot of fun.
Really love it?
Yeah, I love it.
Okay.
Okay. Obviously,
he almost busted out freaking like $30 or $40 to buy a Blu-ray version of it earlier until he found it didn't have English subtitles.
No, someone really needs to do a Blu-ray restoration.
If someone's out there ever listening to this.
I don't know who has I think the rights are probably a huge issue between Kong rights and Godzilla rights to, you know, restore. They do have the American version on Blu-ray, but I really, really.
He doesn't want the American version.
I don't want the American version. I want the Japanese version. But anyway, obviously, two of my favorite movie characters of all time, Godzilla and King Kong, clashing. They're about to do a remake, kind of this movie, spiritual in a few months. But I think it's a lot of fun. I love the lighthearted nature of it. I mean, I love the more serious Godzilla movies too, but I really like the kind of change in the pivot and tone they did for this one. I think the monster fights are really just the one monster fight, really, at the end. It's a lot of fun. The rock throwing, the Godzilla using his tail as a weapon, just basically a river-suited wrestling match for a large portion of it. I mean, the effects are a little rough. We forgot to talk about, like, the little puppets, like, they use for the distance shots.
It's bad.
Basically look like they're on popsicle sticks, just kind of fighting each other. But, and the matting is really bad in this movie. I wish they had spent more time working on that. But this movie is a lot of fun. A Fukube's score, obviously, I love it. I love Godzilla's theme and everything in this movie. So, all in all, I think I'm going to give this movie a B+.
A B+? Plus.
A B+. Yeah.
All right. Well, this is the most fun I've had with a Godzilla movie so far.
Yeah.
On this, or probably any movie that we've done so far, honestly. Is it the best made one? Absolutely not. I'd still probably say, hands down, it's the first Godzilla.
Mm-hmm.
But it's really entertaining. They did a good job crafting this story and actually putting characters in this movie that you care about or that entertain you, at least
entertaining. I don't know, care is a strong word, but
yeah. But they're funny, they're humorous, and they make there's some good comedy and humor in this movie, and I think that they did a really good job changing and shifting that tone from the more serious Godzilla films that came before it. And I really like that about it. I think that really helps make it a lot more entertaining. So that's really helpful. Like we said, the effects are hit or miss. Mostly the miss is just the matting.
Yeah.
And like some of the puppetry work, like you said. But other than that, I mean, the suits look pretty cool. I mean, besides
King Kong's a little rad.
King Kong's a little stupid looking, but I mean, he's still funny to look at. Yeah. So I guess he's entertaining. But, matting, like I said, looks a little rough. The puppetry's a little rough, but, a Fukube's score is great. And I actually had quite a bit of fun with this one, so I'm also gonna give it a B+.
All right. Well, before we get into what's coming up next week, we got some big news. Hey, he's got big news! If you're an Ultraman fan, this is big news. So, Mill Creek, who puts out a lot of, you know, cult classic movies, they have gotten the rights to Ultraman. And October 15th of this year, they are putting out just your regular Blu-ray packs and then also Blu-ray Steelbook box sets of the original Ultraman and Ultra Q series. They're like $49.98 a piece.
Or something like that on Amazon.
On Amazon. They are available for pre-order. I'm about to go pre-order mine right now.
God, you freaking nerd.
It's really... Now, Ultra Q did get a Shout Factory release here not too long ago. And Shout, I mean, it's a DVD release, but Shout Factory did it justice. They did a really good job with that. And Ultra 7, Shout Factory also put out. Ultraman.
The one that you have is rough.
I think it's still the only one available on DVD legally. I don't know who, I can't remember who put it. It might have been Mill Creek too, like a long time ago. But
it's bad.
But yeah, so that the Ultraman DVD set that's available now is...
It's like a thick plastic box with like little paper sleeves with the discs in them. It's bad.
And the DVD quality isn't that great. So I'm really excited for that. I love the... I know Dylan hasn't really got into it, but...
I haven't watched any of it, so...
Me and Andrew are really big... We're, like, neck deep in Ultraman right now. We're watching them in order, except for we did watch the Netflix thing when it came out. But we started with Ultra Q, and right now we've gotten all the way to about halfway through Ultraman Leo, a little over halfway through Ultraman Leo. It's been a lot of fun. I mean, they're cheesy, and yeah, if you don't have a high tolerance for cheese, you're not going to like them, but I think they're a lot of fun, especially Ultra Q, Ultraman, and Ultra 7, the first three, I think are all three really good, and I think really, they're like, you know, Star Trek came out around that time, the original Star Trek show, and they're really not any different in terms of quality than that original Star Trek show. I mean, they look a little cheesier because they're heavily reliant on men in giant rubber suits, which is naturally harder to look good than what they were doing in Star Trek, but really, there's not that much of a difference in the effects. Not counting the digital restoration they did of Star Trek here a while back when they put in a bunch of CGI stuff, like they did with, you know, like Lucas and Star Wars, but I think they're a lot of fun, and if you haven't tried to really check out Ultraman, I think you should. And if you don't like the older stuff, maybe you can try out some of the newer stuff. I haven't actually sat down and watched any of the newer stuff, like I said, except for the Netflix anime. Which, the Netflix anime is pretty decent, too. So, maybe Dylan should start with a Netflix anime. Mm-hmm. There's only, how many episodes were there? Like, 12 or something. I'm not really sure. But, anyway, I'm excited. I'm really excited about it. And,
I'm sure they'll look good.
Mill Creek does a pretty good job. And I think they'll do a good job on the restoration.
So. Speaking of steelbooks.
I got my Mothra steelbook in, was it yesterday?
Yesterday.
And I haven't put the disc in the tray yet, but it looks really pretty. They have a plastic sleeve cover. The little plastic
slip cover that goes over it.
That actually has stuff on, like, that. It has, like,
It has the Mothra twins.
The tagline on the front of it. I forget what it said.
I don't know. And then it has the Mothra twins.
And it has, like, the plot synopsis on the back of it, like, on the plastic sleeve, not on the actual case, and the little Mothra twins. And then if you take that off, the cover...
is Mothra.
Is the, like...
on the front.
A painting of Mothra's face, and then if you turn it over, it's, like, three different shots of Mothra in her larval form. And then you open it up, and they have a couple of screenshots from the movie. And it's really nice, and...
it's a nice still book. I like it.
Looks really
good. If I were a bigger Godzilla fan.
If you're really a bigger Godzilla fan. Yeah, you need...
I'm not a huge Godzilla fan, so it's not worth the $14 for me.
It's Mothra.
I know it's Mothra, but still, you have to be a fan.
You're not a fan yet.
If you don't love Godzilla, you probably don't love Mothra. But I'm excited when we finally... Actually, we'll be
I don't think I'm devoted enough to bust out $14 on a Mothra.
We'll be watching that film. Good transition.
Next week.
Good segue. Next week, we'll be popping that baby in the tray and watching that for our review of Mothra, because Mothra, the next Godzilla film
is the first time you'll ever watch it on Blu-ray.
Yeah. The next Godzilla film is Mothra versus Godzilla. So I thought it would be good to watch Mothra's debut film before that. So yeah, we'll be watching Mothra. So that will be
I guess we'll find out if the Blu-ray transfer on it is decent.
I guess we will. We'll find out. That will be coming to you next Tuesday.
Next Tuesday.
And then after that, like I said, Mothra versus Godzilla be the week after that.
Followed quickly by Rodan.
Followed by Ghidorah the Three-Headed Monster. And then after that, I don't know.
We're not going to worry about it.
We're not going to worry about it. So
that's like 4 weeks from now.
Is there anything else we need to talk about?
No, I mean, other than go ahead and promote our other show.
Yeah, so we also do another podcast called DNA Film Wars, where we talk about the new release of every weekend, most of the time. Because actually this weekend we're going to be doing A New Hope.
Which is part of our Star Wars
series. Part of our Star Wars Look Back series. Which we're building up to Star Wars Rise of Skywalker, whatever it's called.
At the end of the year, yeah.
And so, we just published our Far From Home episode.
/ quick Midsommar review.
Yeah, put a quick Midsommar review on the end of that one. But, go and check us out over there. Dylan, where can they find us?
We are, if you want to find the podcast to listen to it, we're up on SoundCloud, as well as iTunes, Google Play, and pretty much any pod hosting service you can find. If you want to follow us on social media for that podcast, we are up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're at DNA Film Wars, all lowercase, No Space on all those platforms. And if you want to contact us with that one, we are at DNA Film Wars.
At DNA Film Wars?
Yeah, sorry. We are DNAFilmWars@gmail.com.
So, talking about this podcast, Andrew, where can they find our website at?
You can find us at www.stompthisway.podbean.com.
Also contact us at stompthisway1954@gmail.com.
Yep.
Where are we at? On social media.
On social media, we are also up on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter, where Aaron gets happy with the Twitter fingers and the
Instagram because I can automatically post to the other two.
Yeah, we are at Stomp This Way on all those platforms, so give us a like or a follow.
Might get a Tumblr too, because you can automatically post a Tumblr from Instagram too.
I don't think how many accounts can you post? I thought you could only post to two other accounts.
You can post to Facebook, Twitter, and Tumblr all at the same time.
All at the same time.
It's really cool. But I don't know. Does anyone still use Tumblr?
No, we don't need a Tumblr.
That's all we had for you this week. As I think I'll probably close this out on the King Kong chant track, because that'll be the last time we have a chance to do that one, and it be in context at least. So as always, I'm Aaron.
I'm Andrew.
And I'm Dylan, and we'll catch you in the next one. Yeah.